Hi, folks, it's Sherry. This week we are going to replay one of our early episodes, I think it was episode 7, where we talked about how to be a stress ninja. And this is timely for both Rob and I because we are both pretty darn packed. Life is really full right now, as it is, I know, for many of you. I'm getting ready to take 20 students to Guatemala for a 2-week cross-cultural psychology immersion class. And Drip is growing like crazy, so Rob is really busy and burning the midnight oil a little bit. So we are returning to some of these tactics that we talked about in this podcast and really thinking about them. Rather than rehashing them all, we thought we would just relaunch this episode and hope that you get some benefit from it in the midst of all your busyness. Thanks for listening to Zen Founder.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Founder. Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
Why are we talking about stress today? I can't imagine we have anything stressful in our life.
I don't know.
How does your day look?
Oh my gosh. It's not terrible. As soon as I get off this podcast, I'm going to take Fisher to his violin lesson 30 minutes across town and then run him back here so that you can hang out with him for 20 minutes while I then get back in the car, drive to my office, lead a workshop. Then I supervise my team of student therapists or student psychologists for an hour. Then I meet with my postdoc. Then I have 4 patients back to back, which puts me to like 6:15. I will scramble to do my paperwork and come home and hopefully finally read the last 3 chapters of Harry Potter, book 7, to Finn.
Nice. Day in the life of you. Your days are typically like that, am I right?
Yeah, it's pretty packed.
Yeah.
With people stuff, people oriented, right. Taking care of people, supervising people, teaching people.
Watching kids. Yeah, I don't envy that for sure.
What's going on with you?
I basically rushed home from taking one kid to school in order to record this episode before I jump on a webinar. I actually have to rehearse a webinar, and then I'm giving a webinar live to a couple hundred people. Since our nanny is out with strep throat this whole week, our 4-year-old is here. Like you said, taking him to music and then basically dropping him off while the webinar is still going on. So as much as we don't like our kids to watch TV, he will watch a little bit of TV while I'm finishing that up. And then I'll rush out of here, take him to preschool. And since the preschool is only 3 hours, it's not worth the drive because it's like a 30-minute round trip. So it's not worth driving back home. So I'll probably work from a coffee shop with crappy Wi-Fi for 3 hours and then basically pick both kids up and my day is done. So today, if I actually want to get real work done, I will probably have to wait until the kids go to bed.
Yeah, you have like the window between 12 and 3 when Fisher's in preschool and Finn's still at school.
And I will get some work done. But for me, like I'll have no double monitors and the internet will be slow. You know, I'll probably be tethered to my phone during that time just because there's no coffee shop in the area that has a decent Wi-Fi. So
it's a pretty stressful week, largely because the babysitter is sick. We've had to both rearrange our schedules to cover all this extra childcare time, and that's gotten a little crazy.
Right. And frankly, I'm thankful that we have the flexibility to do this. Like, what do people who work 2 9-to-5s do when this happens? I have no idea. Like, do you just take off work?
I have no idea.
It'd be really hard. Like, I feel like it's hard enough and we have somewhat flexible schedules, but I could see it being much more difficult, you know, even than we have.
Yeah, I definitely feel grateful that we can move things around and make adjustments as we need to.
So what are we talking about today?
Well, let's talk about stress since we're living in the middle of it right now.
Yeah, it seems appropriate. I think the first question I have about stress is when I hear stress, I think of anxiety. Are those the same thing or are they different?
They're very similar. They're very physiologically similar in terms of what is going on in the brain. We talk about the stress response as a response to a threat. So the fight, flight, or freeze response, it's a very physical response. The minute that you encounter something that's threatening, your body goes through this whole process where it prepares itself to respond by elevated heart rate, your breathing speeds up, your muscles tighten, your you know, your heart is working hard to push blood into your extremities so you can fight or flight. That's where that term comes from.
Well, if it was 10,000 years ago, it'd be fighting an animal. And today, what does fight mean? You just get elevated and angry?
No, not necessarily angry. Your senses become more acute. So if you're under an extreme deadline and that stress response kicks in, you may be working faster. Your brain may be working faster. Your body's working faster. It allows kind of all of your senses to respond in a faster, more acute way.
And I think, you know, I think I may have experienced this in, say, a one-on-one meeting where I have something really difficult to tell someone, or someone has something really difficult to tell me, you know, like, yeah, I don't know. An example could be like, you know, you're laying someone off, or you're getting fired, or it's a big conflict and you feel the hair stand up on the back of your neck, and maybe you sweat a little bit, and everything, almost like my hearing, I hear everything really loud. Is that an example of this?
Absolutely. Sometimes you can kind of hear your own heartbeat.
Right. Okay.
So your body is preparing itself.
Right. And so fight would kind of be to sit there and, I guess, just engage it. And flight would be if you, like, ran away.
The mechanism that at play here is obviously an old mechanism. It's pretty suitable for long-term evolutionary adaptation. But also, you know, if you encounter a scary guy in a dark alley, you might need to run. Your stress mechanism is what will help you run faster than you may normally be able to run. The thing about stress is that it's this body process geared towards protecting us from threat, but because we live in this very modern world, most of our threats aren't physical threats. They are the difficult meeting threats. They are things that cause us stress, but our body is still geared to react to physical threats. I want to break it down even a little bit more. So we have these categories of acute stress, chronic stress.
And acute stress means that it's a single point in time. Is that right? And chronic stress is longer term.
Right. And acute stress is what our bodies are designed for. We're awesome at acute stress. But when that acute stress physiological reaction happens over time, like when we flip over from acute stress into chronic stress, then we are really pushing our bodies beyond what they're designed to do. And so we see this over the long run, this elevated heart rate, this inability to calm down, muscle tension, and that can kick over into really serious health consequences.
Right. Okay. So an example might be you have a deadline and you're pushing really hard, you're stressed about it. It's actually helpful, right? It's this Yerkes-Dodson curve where to a certain extent, the stress motivates you to get this thing done. But if you basically do that over and over for a period of a year or 2 years, it will start to break your body down.
Very literally, it will break your body down.
Right.
Yeah.
So what are, and in what ways is, I mean, what are some of the consequences of stress? We probably heard about them, but.
Yeah, they're pretty far-reaching. Basically, any chronic health problem has some relationship to stress. Probably most notably is heart disease. There's a lot of research linking chronic stress and heart disease. Other things like obesity, sleep problems, asthma, headaches, migraines, diabetes, any kind of gastrointestinal problems, irritable bowel syndrome, and then any other chronic disease that people are dealing with, whether that's Crohn's disease or multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's disease, those are all very susceptible to the presence of chronic stress. There's even some interesting research looking at chronic stress and aging. So if you want to keep your youthful skin, chronic stress is an enemy of that. Your cells literally start to break down when they are stressed for too long.
Stress is a part of a lot of people's lives, kind of in the modern day lives, right? Of like commuting and sitting in traffic, and then you go to work, and the kind of the story, you know, the typical story would be that you don't like your job and you're sitting in a cubicle where you don't get any sun and you're stressed about deadlines. You don't like your coworkers, and then you drive home and then you're stressed because between 5 and 8, your kids, that's the worst time of the day, you know, to be around kids because they're all irritable. And then I don't know. It just seems like this is a very common element of our culture as it is today. Our civilization.
Yeah, I think that's really true.
And it seems like it causes everything. I mean, I'm being a little bit hyperbolic, but it's like the list of things you just named are...
Yeah, I mean, there are certain kinds of cancer that are highly linked to stress. And we're just beginning to understand the relationship between the field of study called epigenetics, but it's the relationship between kind of your genetic encoding and how your environment triggers certain genes to express themselves or not. So, for example, being in a highly stressful environment when you're a child or at certain parts
of your developmental growth. It's like the wrong stress at the wrong time can develop into or can kind of trigger your less desirable genetic coding and lead you susceptible to cancer or other kinds of diseases.
All right, so it can actually push you over the edge in terms of creating behaviors or creating actual health problems that existed in genetic code.
Right.
It's crazy. And then emotionally, I mean, obviously those are like physical things. Emotionally, what does it do to you?
Chronically stressed people are generally not very pleasant people. You know, there's relationships between chronic stress and family violence, substance abuse. So people are either working really hard to keep it all together, which generally, you know, makes them sort of irritable and edgy, maybe kind of impulsive, not necessarily good decision makers, or they're trying to escape that physiological feeling of stress and how uncomfortable it is to be sort of saturated in adrenaline all the time, and are trying to kind of cope with that discomfort through alcohol abuse or other kinds of substance abuse. Before we go too far into this, I think it is really important to say clearly that stress is not always bad. Stress is really useful not only in protecting us, but in optimizing our performance. This reaction that's happening within you to make you more aware and acute and process faster definitely helps with productivity. There's this really old study from social psychology, I don't know, in the 50s or something, called the Yerkes-Dodson principle. It's this inverted U-shaped curve that depicts the relationship between arousal or stress and performance. Stress increases, performance increases, but only to a point. There's this tipping point in this process where there's too much stress. The body's sort of flooded with stress and performance begins to decrease. Particular place at where the curve, you know, shifts, where performance begins to decline, is different based on whether the task that you're doing is easy or difficult or novel or something that you've done a lot. So, you know, the exact level of anxiety or stress that's optimal depends on the difficulty of the thing that you're trying to do.
So I have a confession to make, and you're probably totally unaware of this, but for the past 7 months or so, I've been a little stressed. Have you noticed?
Who, you?
Yeah, exactly. I have probably yelled more in the past 7 months in anger than I have in the past 5 years. And it's a number of, there's always a number of causes, but for me, it's just, you know, dealing with the stress of kind of taking my business to the next level and some challenges I've been facing in doing that. But I have noticed behaviors in me where if I come home from work and I'm stressed and one of the kids yells or one of the kids is short, I will find myself like going into the cabinet and looking for food, like looking for sugary food. And I picked up, I'll like drink coffee. I'll feel like I need caffeine. I will eat chocolate. I have actually come into the back and like jumped on Amazon to my wish list and bought something literally. And I've noticed this as a pattern. It's like, I'm trying to escape and get what I'm assuming is some type of endorphin rush from this, or, you know, kid screams and I'll just walk in and like pour a glass of wine. And it's like a reaction to try to numb this down. Is that something that ties into this?
Oh yeah. You're describing perfectly what a lot of us do, probably most of us do, use one of those or other coping mechanisms to kind of avoid how we're feeling and cope with the stress that's living in our bodies. You know, you have a good handle on it in the sense that, you know, you don't want to yell or be a jerk. And so you're trying to manage that, but you usually manage it by avoiding additional stressors.
Yeah,
like the kids.
Right. I found that I'm well aware of the behaviors, you know, kind of the, oh, I'm trying to eat chocolate and here's the reason. I find that it comes out in some way, you know, one way or another, whether it's I need to do a run that night, whether it's I need to step into the other room and actually listen to a podcast or like read some fiction or do something. I need to escape for a few minutes and let it chill out.
One of the strategies of dealing with chronic stressors, you know, things that are sort of always there that are adding stress to our lives, is through emotion-focused coping, which is a fancy term for like handling the way that you feel about it. And so when you go sit and read for a little bit or go for a run or take a walk or call a friend, you know, when you're using those kinds of behaviors or coping strategies. You're just living your life in a way that allows you to calm down and sort of step away from the screaming child or the email list or your Trello or all of the things that are causing the chronic stress. You're coping with stress, but you can cope with stress in proactive ways or in healthy ways, or you can cope with stress in ways that over the long run cause you more problems, like extensive alcohol abuse.
And I mean, to be clear, this past 6 months has been the most stressful of my entrepreneurial career, you know, since I went independent. And what has pulled me out of it has been the past 6 weeks, I've just decided to make a change and to remove the stressors and kind of attack. I know specifically what's stressing me out, and I've decided to kind of attack them head on. And my retreat a couple weeks ago, where I spent 2 days away from everyone, really showed me that I'm not actually stressed. Like, it's not something inside me, it's external factors. Because when I went away for 2 days, I felt great. You know, there was no family, no work, no computers. I read a bunch of fiction. I read some graphic novels. I listened to a lot of audiobooks, and I made a lot of notes about what was great last year and what sucked life out of me. And that sucked life out of me list was very telling. And every one of those things I linked to, you know, the causes of my stress. And so one by one, I'm attacking each of those right now. And it's a great feeling, to be honest. And I've already changed my attitude in terms of just being more relaxed and being able to, you know, feel like I have more flexibility in my schedule and some other things.
Hooray.
Yeah, no, I know. And it allows weeks like this to happen. And I'm not stressed about this week, actually. Whereas a month ago, if this week happened, I would have been really stressed about it because I would have been worried about not getting enough work done and not getting enough work in. And now it's just, there's been a sudden change, and my retreat was a big part of that, but it's also just a mindset shift that was brought into play by that retreat.
And not to overanalyze you, but the strategy that you're talking about is called problem-focused coping, right? You know that this stress exists, so you really look at the causes of it and what you can do to change your life so that you have less interaction with those stressors.
Right, and I think we, as adults, we might have a luxury of being able to do that. I know some kids who grow up in, you know, certain living situations may not have that luxury.
Right.
But as adults, I think we have more of the ability to do that.
So you solve the problem if you can, or you change your approach to the problem. And then if that's not possible, then you try to work on how you feel about it, or on, you know, feeling more relaxed, even in a stressful situation.
Yeah. I mean, that brings up a good point. Like, what are the other ways, you know, if someone listening to this is probably thinking, well, yes, I am stressed right now, or I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future. In terms of chronic stress, right? I mean, the one-time stress is the stuff that motivates you, and we're not saying don't let that happen because it's actually a good thing. But in terms of chronic stress, if someone can identify it, what should they do to overcome it? What can they do?
One of the important things is to take a really honest look at it. I mean, chronic stress, as we've already talked about, is so dangerous to you physically, and then obviously dangerous to your relationships and your personal sense of well-being. There are two strategies to managing chronic stress. One is problem-focused coping. The second is emotion-focused coping. You utilized problem-focused coping when you made a list of each of the items that were causing you stress. And with each one of those items, ask, is this changeable? Is this avoidable? Can I do something to make this less stressful? Can I push out deadlines? Can I change the structure of my team? Can I change the schedule of my workday? Can I change my environment? To basically try to problem solve each of those stressors so that it's less powerful in your life. And some of those things, you know, you might discover, wow, I actually have a lot of freedom and flexibility, and this thing can and should have much less power over me. There are going to be some things like your kids or the old ball and chain that, you know, hopefully you're not going to get rid of just because they stress you out.
Yeah, no, exactly.
In that case, you really want to look at, how is it possible to feel differently about this? Like, why is this so stressful for you? Why are you reacting to this in the way that you are? You know, kind of do a little self-analysis and try to see if you can jog loose whatever your hang-up is about this particular problem in your life.
And, you know, just the evenings are tough in general with kids. And so what I made a note of during my retreat was, every day I want to create one memory that the kids have the potential of remembering into adulthood. And I want to do that with each child. Sometimes it's together. So, you know, I may break out a new game and we play like a card game or a tabletop game or something like that. And other times it's just breaking out my guitar and having one child play the cello behind me and we play a Green Day song and I teach him the chords and he plays it. With the other one, I might be teaching him to read or reading a new book or teaching the older one to program. I mean, there's all kinds of potential activities, but the fact that I committed to doing that has completely shifted our interactions now. In the evening, since I know we're going to be doing interesting things, when I get home, I'm much more likely to let them watch a little bit of TV to decompress while I make dinner. And then after dinner, I want to make this thing, this memorable moment like I'm talking about. And so we have like planned stuff. It's not me trying to avoid them or it's not them being upset by things. It's like they know something fun is coming and so do I. And so that's maybe an example of what I've done so far to successfully overcome what seems like something that would be really hard to change, right? It's like, quote, my kids are stressing me out. Well, you can't get rid of your kids, right? I mean, you're not going to make a drastic change like that, but that's the change that I chose to make. And so far it seems to be working.
You shifted in doing that from passive to active. This is happening to me. These kids they're loud, they're crazy, they're messy, and I'm kind of a victim here. And that's a really stressful stance to be in, where you walk into your house and you feel like your life is chaotic and none of it's in your control. And I think what you did in your retreat and deciding to really approach that time differently is you took a much more active, proactive, hold on, I am choosing that I want to have specific kinds of experiences with my kids every day. And so I'm going to make that happen and not let the, you know, not let the time happen to me. I'm going to do something with it that I'm choosing. And so shifting from passive to active is one of those really great strategies or ways to think about feeling differently about the things that stress you out. So basically anything that is restoring a level of calm to your body and your mind are really helpful strategies for handling stress. You know, exercise, swimming, running, yoga, of course, meditation, prayer, mindfulness, you know, taking some time to have a good meal and make a meal and eat it slowly and really sort of savor the sensory experience of that, not trying to rush through the moments of your life. That can be taking the long way home or driving through a cool neighborhood or the fields or along the coast instead of taking the freeway. Even if it takes longer, you're taking that time to just slow down and be more present in your life. There's almost an intentional slowing down because so much of the stress reaction, both physiologically and mentally, is about going fast and speeding up. So any time in your life you're like intentionally slowing down, you're counteracting the stress that's happening to your body.
So for me, it wasn't until I was probably around maybe 30 years old that I was able to identify stress and able to attack it head on as if it were something I could really do something about. I felt like before that, it always managed me, you know, all through school and everything. Now, as soon as I start to feel stressed, I know that I'm feeling stressed and I quickly identify what it was that caused the stress. So the other day, as an example, I'm in the middle of my workday and I just felt elevated. Like I felt anxious and I didn't know why. And I went back through and looked at the last few tasks that I'd done. And it turns out there were a couple support tickets that had come through and they were about something that had gone wrong, right? A bug, and we had caused a problem for someone. We had resolved that and I had actually apologized and that person replied and said, don't worry about it. You know, it wasn't that big of a deal. But when I moved on with my day, I was still, you know, like anxious and elevated about it. Once I was able to identify it, then I said, oh, that is actually not a deal anymore. Like it's not something that's stressing me out anymore. And I, for me, maybe it's because I'm such an analytical person, you know, or like the engineering math mind. But for me, it's being able to identify something and then being able to either dismiss it because it really isn't a rational thing or to attack it head on if it is in fact rational. You know, if I'm stressed and anxious about something that is coming next week and it's just taking its toll on me, which things tend to do, I will try to move that up and to not wait until next week to do it, but to attack it head on today and have that difficult conversation or make that difficult thing just to get through it and get rid of the stress. So I guess my question to you is, like, A, is that a common approach? Does that work for most people? And are there variations of that if you're not so, you know, right-brained like I am?
So the technique that you're using is basically to practice paying attention to when you begin to feel those early symptoms of stress, so to speak.
That's right. Do I and identify what is very specifically causing that? Because for me, it's always a very specific thing. I don't tend to just feel stressed for no reason. I know some people do.
Yeah.
And then for them, I mean, I don't know. Would you recommend that? Would be like a recommendation for like maybe therapy or talking to a professional about it, right? If you're feeling stressed all the time and there's no apparent cause.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to sort of figure out what the cause is. If you are feeling stressed all the time and you don't know why, you can still cope or work on calming your body down. I mean, you can still sort of treat the effect of the stress and how it's affecting your mind and your body. But yeah, I think what you describe is sort of the perfect technique. Identifying stress early on and then looking at the trigger or what has caused it, and then rationally thinking through, what can I do about this? Do I need to respond differently to this? It's sort of like, is the stress telling me something? Is the stress telling me that this isn't resolved? But in this case, no, the problem was resolved. The ticket was resolved, and you just needed to talk yourself through that a little bit.
Yeah, and what I've noticed is sometimes my kind of stress response is it's beyond what it should be for how simple the issue actually is. You know, something might not be that big of a deal, and yet my body will continue to feel stressed, and I have to basically, you know, kind of dismiss it, I guess.
We accumulate things from our day too, or from our week. We pick up little pieces of stress. You know, I have like 7 meetings this afternoon, back to back to back. And if something feels sort of funny in the workshop I'm leading, or I feel like I don't do a good job, the possibility is that I then take that with me to the team meeting that I'm leading. And so I feel a little off kilter or defensive. Then I take that into my next meeting. And so I think there's absolutely a snowball effect to stress. And the most recent identifiable stressor might not be the thing that really, you know, you might feel like your reaction is really exaggerated, but you also may be responding to more than that thing.
Right. And then, you know, the other example, I guess, you know, a really bad illness. Maybe they were, you know, diagnosed with cancer 6 months ago and they're in chemo and they're in remission or whatever, but they're fighting through it. And I mean, that is a constant stressor and you can't just attack that head on, right? I mean, you can't just do away with it. How should they think about this?
Well, I think like any stressor that we're stuck with, whether we live in a stressful environment or we're ill or we live with someone who's ill, you know, those are long-term chronic stressors. And that's when we don't necessarily try to attack the problem, but we try to look at how we're coping with it and how we're feeling about it. To use your example, most cutting-edge, state-of-the-art treatments for cancer involve therapy and yoga and other things that help people cope with the stress and the anxiety of having that kind of serious illness. And those are not just like foofy interventions. Those are very, very essential for people to heal well. Optimally, they have a level of calm within their body and their, you know, their cortisol level is controlled and their adrenaline levels are controlled so that their body can effectively try to fight the cancer and heal. I'm attempting to kind of break it down in these two different categories, problem focused and emotion focused. And So in that example, when you can't do anything about the problem, you switch over into how you feel about it and doing everything you can to control that stress response. Problem focused is when you're tackling the problem and trying to eliminate its power over your life.
So if you'd like to find out more about how to identify stress in your life and how to overcome it using both the strategies we've discussed here, but also some additional resources that we haven't mentioned, come to zenfounder.com/stress. It'll lead you to the show notes for this episode. And we have put together a cheat sheet with tactics and, examples and thoughts on how to deal with stress in your life.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.